Scott.
I'm Whitney.
And this is episode 89 of Frankly, My Dear. And this week's episode is brought to you by Shadow Dog Productions. Go to shadowdogproductions.com to check out some awesome radio plays. You can buy some DVDs. They're doing feature-length films now. So go check out Shadow Dogs. And what are we doing this week, Whitney?
We are reviewing the Mark Wahlberg comedy Ted.
Get out of town.
We are listing our top five favorite movies that suck.
Yeah, the worst five movies that we love.
Yeah. And then we'll listen to, like, we'll read some listener feedback and
stuff. We got a lot of listener feedback, so we're going to jump right into it now. Stick around.
Do we have movie news anymore?
Whitney just had to go to the bathroom, and I'm going to try to get through as many of these listener feedbacks before she gets back. We'll see how it's... Number one, Uncle Thomas. Uncle Thomas writes, "Hey, FMD, Whitney is a heel lover? Disturbing. The only guy who's not a heel on her list, and she talks about him in her I'd do him voice. Really disturbing." We're talking about pro wrestling. Last week we talked about Memphis Heat, a documentary.
Hey!
And, uh-oh.
What are you doing?
I wanted to see how many listener feedbacks I could get through before you came
back
from the bathroom.
You don't care if I hear about the feedback?
No. Actually, this one was specifically to do with you. So, Uncle Thomas says, "Whitney is a heel lover? Disturbing. The only guy who's not a heel on her list, and she talks about him in her I do him voice."
Ew, that's really not what I sound like.
I do him.
Ew.
How would you say I do him?
How would I say I do? I'd do him.
I don't think that's the voice he's talking about, because he says really disturbing, all in caps,
whatever,
exclamation points. Listeners, if you haven't figured it out, Scott loves wrestling. I think within a minute of meeting my sons, he asked them if they were into wrestling. As Scott and Whitney's Utah wedding reception, Scott gave my sons a gift, a bag full of wrestling action figures.
That's so nice. I had no idea you did that. I remember you giving them to him, but I didn't know it was at a reception.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Because I had them in storage forever. And so I thought, they'll play with them a lot more than I will.
Yeah.
And they've loved them ever since. Uncle Thomas's top five favorite pro wrestlers are, number five, CM Punk. I like his straight-edge persona. Hated the portrayal of him being drunk at an English pub.
What? That was the best!
He says, "Yes, I take this too seriously."
Oh, I loved when he was getting drunk, but not really.
Number four, The Rock. The eyebrow says it all. Number three, Jimmy Superfly Snuka. His name is Superfly. Enough said, brother. Number two, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. One of the craziest talkers with absolutely no ability to speak the English language. Made up words on the fly. He's amazing.
Was he very Southern?
Very.
Yeah.
Number one, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, the greatest talker the industry has ever produced. Woo!
Woo!
Love the podcast. Love you two more. Uncle Thomas. Next up is Nolan from the Bargain Bin Review.
Are all these going to be about wrestling, I guess?
A lot of them. People love the pro wrestling one.
All right. Wait, has Nolan written in before?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Has he?
I feel like I don't know
did
who
once.
He is. Oh, okay.
But give me that. We have two new writer enters. I'm going to look through this list.
Oh, man.
And see
this
if I don't recognize.
Quality.
He has
time.
Written in before. He did.
Right.
He did last time.
Okay, hey gang, no love for the Nature Boy or the Horseman?
Woo!
Tragic. I want to get Scott's take on this one. During my wrestling watching days, he did that without G's, 1996 to 2000 or so, I was a big fan of Mankind, Cactus Jack, Dude Love. But ever since his excellent autobiography and featured storyline in Beyond the Mat, I can't bear to watch Mick Foley in the ring. Maybe it's because he's essentially retired and therefore used only to put other guys over, i.e. let them beat the crap out of him. But I think it's because in my head, Mankind, a vicious, relentless mauler, and Mick Foley, a congenial author and family man who has no business in the ring, let alone getting mixed up in feuds. Oh, so they're like, he thinks that they don't go.
Right.
Anywhere.
It's hard.
Thoughts?
Yeah, my thoughts are don't watch Celebrity Wife Swap. because that...
He was... Oh my gosh, do they still make that show, or did we only watch, like, the only two episodes that they made?
I put a season pass on our TiVo,
and we never got anywhere.
We watched two episodes. Gary Busey, Mick Foley...
Wait, was there...
Maybe there was a third.
But there was, like... Anyway. What happened to that show? That was hilarious.
But anyway, with Mick Foley, yeah, the same way. Because I watched him in ECW, WWF. I watched him as Cactus Jack. I watched him in the Japanese death matches with Terry Funk. And so I've seen this guy just, like, drenched in his own blood, going crazy.
And I can't ever picture him as being, like, a badass at all, because the only one I know is, like, from Celebrity Wife Swap.
Yeah, now and, like, he's a now, totally toned-down version of himself.
And I don't like his beard.
It's hard, because he was my favorite growing up, and now coming back, I still like to see him because he's a fun personality, but he's like a shell of his former persona.
That's sad.
Yeah. So, next up, new writer-inner.
Woot woot.
Bill Thompson from Bill's Movie Emporium says, "Hey guys, new listener and a fan of the show. Cool. I'm also a blogger who'd love to get his hands on Memphis Heat, and I know you said to contact you if you're interested in the film. Well, I'm interested, and I'm contacting you, so there." I already sent him the contact info, but if anybody else wants a copy of Memphis Heat, I don't know how many they're giving away, but I asked it and I received. So Courtney Small totally hooked us up with that. And email us at franklymydearpodcast@gmail.com.
They're only going to give them out if you have like some kind of blog or podcast to review it on.
Right,
I
most
think.
Likely. If you're as famous as us.
Yes.
Next up, speak of the devil.
We've got Courtney Small from Big Thoughts from a Small Mind. He says, "Hey, FMD, glad you guys were able to get a hold of a copy of Memphis Heat. I quite enjoyed that documentary. I had no idea that Jerry the King Lawler was actually considered a great wrestler back in the day. Another wrestling documentary I think you should see is Glow, the story of the gorgeous ladies of wrestling. It is an amusing film that focuses on a group of female wrestlers from the late 80s, early 90s. Does that mean China?
No.
Ah. I saw the film at the Hot Docs Film Festival back in April and loved it. As for my You Choose pick, I'm going to select the 1993 film Farewell, My Concubine. I haven't seen that in forever.
I've never seen it. I don't even know what it's about.
Oh, it's good.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm glad he chose that.
Well, thanks, Courtney. And yeah, I want to check out Glow. I watched the trailer for it. It looks incredible.
Didn't you tell me, like, the lady wrestlers of the 80s and 90s were, like, just hoes?
No. Well, in the, like, the 90s in the WWF, they were not very athletic.
Mm.
A lot of boobs bigger than heads, and I was watching Survivor Series today.
Like my ladies.
From, like, 1998, and it was, like, Tori, Deborah, like, all of these women who, like, had no business, like, wrestling one another. But Glow is completely different. Glow was an actual, it was like a federation, it was like a WWF, but all women. There were no male wrestlers.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a documentary about this federation.
Oh, okay.
So, next up is Rebecca, who writes, "Happy 4th of July. I just watched Black Swan. That's one effed up movie. Brilliant, but utterly disturbing. Three separate times I almost threw up. But this is not about my low threshold for the disturbing and grotesque. This is about a single thought I had while I was finished watching it, and that was, this is the flip side of pie. This would have been his end if he had not chosen to abandon the quest for perfection. Now I need to go on a very long walk listening to Katy Perry, Taylor Swift, and the Monkees. Just anything without a lot of depth. Pop, pop, pop music." I want to watch Black Swan again. I've only seen it in theaters, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And I referenced it in a rap battle, and the crowd went crazy. So it's still within our pop culture.
You just wanted to get that in there to brag.
That's right.
That's ridiculous.
Totally won.
From James. Has James written in before?
James has. I had to look it up. It's been a while, okay. James. What the F?
All right. Frankly, my dear, clap, clap. Wait, maybe you know what this means.
Frankly, my dear, clap, 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 clap. Frankly, my dear, clap, 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 clap.
Okay. I really enjoyed listening to episode 88.
You sucked the fun out of that.
As I've been a fan of pro wrestling since WrestleMania 5, where I unfortunately remember Hacksaw Jim Duggan's snot beard more vividly than anything else that happened in the PPV. Hacksaw Jim Duggan was on, like, last week, and it was ridiculous. Like, that guy is broken.
He's...
Speaking of a shell of a man, like, He is just like he looks like a skinny Jabba the Hutt.
He's a pile of bones. He's got this crazy barrel chest.
It's like flabs of skin.
Yeah, he's very old.
Skin has gotten
weird. I will tell you, though, that he looks exactly the same as he did when
he
debuted.
And he has to walk with his butt, like, sticking out and, like, sort of
exactly
bent over.
Exactly the same.
Oh, really?
I'm telling you, you go back and watch WrestleMania 5 and that's not beard. He looks exactly the
same. Gross.
He's really aged well by starting poorly.
I've definitely become a lot less vocal these days online or around friends about how much I watch the sport, in quotation marks. So it was really fun to finally hear someone other than my inner monologue talk and laugh about all of its funny little and not so little quirks and nuances, such as real life incidents getting worked into storylines, crowd chants, the various types of fans, and so on. Your top fives were great too. I would have placed CM Punk and Daniel Bryan at 1 and 2. Oh, so he really does like watch it now.
I know, James.
But I think
you can talk to us anytime.
But
about
I think
this.
It just might be because of the shin guards. I can't place my finger on why. There's something about shin guards that make a pro wrestler look more legitimate and indie to me.
That is probably my favorite listener feedback that's ever come in.
Really?
Yeah,
you love
to talk
shin guards?
About their shin guards.
Their shin guards are pretty cool. Like their outfits, those little panties and the shin guards,
mm-hmm.
It works well.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Memphis Heat, but it sounds like it would be a great documentary to watch. I would like to think that the rise and fall of WCW and the true story of WrestleMania would also be a couple of good documentaries to follow it up with.
Hey, look over there.
Yeah, it's on
look
your wall.
There it is.
As they both give a pretty good rundown of pro wrestling from the early 80s to today. Anywho, I love the episode and I love the show. Keep up the good work. P.S. I love how Poo-Tang Pie became Rootin' Tootin' Pootin' Nanny. Who said that? Was it me?
I don't think it was me.
Rootin' Tootin' Pootin' Nanny. I am so funny.
James, I want to recommend you go out and buy this DVD. It's not very expensive. I got it off of Amazon. I think it was like 10 to 15 bucks, but it's the best of season 1 and 2 of Raw. Spoiler alert, lot of Doink the Clown.
Yeah, a lot
of Doink the Clown, but it's so good. It's it just goes through like almost episode by episode, I feel, and like picks out like a match or an interview or a promo or something like that. It's one of the most entertaining DVDs in my whole collection. So any wrestling fans should go out and get Raw Season 1 and 2. And then Rebecca writes in.
Again.
She writes, I was trying to prepare my Sunday school lesson, but I realized I had to unload all my hate for Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter before I could do it. Yesterday, in a movie marathon, I saw In Order, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, a surprisingly disturbing film, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, and Brave. Yes, Brave was the best of the three, but I hated Abe. Why? Because it offered nothing new. Nothing. Were the fight scenes cool? Yes, they were, but everything in between was flat, dead, and uninteresting. The movie was not an adventure movie. It was not a horror movie, and I think it was actually a drama with fighting. They focused too much on the 3D shots, the ones where things are flying at the audience. And they suck the life out of the rest of the movie.
Ah, suck the life.
I get it. I see what she did there. I would say that this problem comes with a lot of 3D movies, except for Prometheus and Brave, which are examples of movies that are played just enough to the 3D shots without sacrificing the stories or characters. I was let down. Afterward, I just kept thinking that they should have just watched the Buffy Hush episode before sitting down to write the script to understand how you can have character development, horror, and fighting.
That's the best episode. I just watched it a couple days ago.
Which one's Hush?
It's the one where it's quiet with the gentlemen.
Oh,
it's a sign.
Yeah.
They steal the voices, and the gentlemen are, like, gliding all over the town, and they murder people.
The gentlemen are the three creepy-looking guys?
Yeah, with the big smiles
and
the metal
I like
teeth.
Those guys. Yeah, I like those guys
a lot. There's a few of them. There's more than three. Just so you know.
Okay, no problem. Rebecca says, on another note, I never watched pro wrestling, but I loved your wrestling episode. I think it helped that I recently saw Nacho Libre with my family when I was visiting Utah. Missed seeing you, but I totally loved this movie. I was fascinated to find out how the wrestling territories are set up and all the interaction. It reminded me of the time I really sat down and watched a NASCAR race and discovered it was a whole lot more than cars just going around in an oval, that there's all sorts of deals being made by the pit crews about when to fuel and how those deals can make or break a race. So I vote yes on you taking the time to talk about things outside of a film, if a film has been made about it. P.S. I hate the use of 3D in Abe almost as much as I hate Bella from Twilight. No, actually, I hate them the same.
I like 3D. Even with a terrible movie, it helps me like it a little bit more.
Depends. Something
we saw
like
Final Fantasy, what, 5, and it was in 3D?
Final Destination
5. Sorry, Final Destination 5, I liked it.
Or as I like to call it, Anal Destination.
Oh, yeah, because the poster
looks... Go cool. Back and look at the posters, the original posters, you'll get it.
All right, next up. Oh, wait, were we talking about something else? We're good?
No.
Moving on?
No.
No?
Moving on.
Okay. Ryan from the Matinee Cast and the Matinee.ca.
Hey, Ryan.
He says, Dear Franklies, so here's me watching Moonrise Kingdom, being enchanted and wondering what Scott and Whitney think. Nada. Then I watched Prometheus and I got all caught up in its philosophy and wondered what your philosophical point of view. Bumpkiss. After that, I watched Lola Versus, found it problematic, but ultimately worthy, and wondered what side y'all would come down on. Nada. What gives? Did your multiplex balloon down? Not my scene anymore, but was a big fan as a kid. In an early display of Homerism, I cheered for the proud Canadian Brett the Hitman Hart. Speaking of which, have you ever seen his doc Wrestling with Shadows? I think you made me watch that once.
Yes. Yes.
And Scott, you might be interested to see some photos I took a few summers back when there was a set of a luchador matches here in town, and then he gave you the link to the photos.
They were awesome.
Doing the podcasting, you two more. Okay, so yeah, let's talk about this. Moonrise Kingdom, we've been invited to go, like, 2-3 separate times with different friends, and we still haven't made it, and Rushmore is supposedly one of my favorite movies. I don't know what I'm doing. Prometheus, I wanted to see it when it was at the second run theater. Like the, we have one that's like between second run and first run. It's like 1.5 run.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't see it. And then I've never even heard of Lola Versus. This has been the worst summer ever.
I haven't heard of Lola Versus. We just don't get to the theater that often anymore.
We're just lazy.
But this is a film that Courtney hooked us up with, and the DVD came in, and we had wanted to see Moonrise Kingdom. It just kept...
Because we have been seeing stuff, but we've been seeing it second run mostly, so it's like...
We see stuff too late.
Yeah, so do we really want to do a podcast now about 21 Jump Street, since we just saw it a couple weeks ago?
Although it is awesome.
It was awesome.
It's like one of the first full-price DVDs I've bought maybe in 10 years.
Yeah, but with a gift card. Doesn't count.
That's true.
Here you go.
And Prometheus, I keep hearing, not that good. I'll probably never see it.
I want to see it because of Michael Fassbender.
I don't get his appeal.
He's so handsome. He has a lot of teeth.
Okay.
And he's like, he's just like a really good actor. Like, he's really compelling. Even when he's not handsome. Like,
I think
Hunger,
always,
he wasn't handsome. And I just thought he's amazing.
I think
amazing.
He's always good.
Mm-hmm.
Like I see him and I don't ever think he's bad.
Mm.
But then...
He was the only part I liked of X-Men First Class.
Mm. He just doesn't, like, suck me in. Like, I don't see him on a poster and go,
you
oh,
see all those
new
teeth, and you're just like, oh.
You had to show
I
me a Google picture.
I melt in your smile.
I still don't think he has that many teeth.
He has so many teeth.
Next up is New Rider Winner, Nick from French Toast Sunday. Nick is actually our You Choose winner. The way this works is, if you write an email telling us what you thought about the episode or anything to do with film, at franklymydearpodcast@gmail.com, we'll pick one email at random, and that person gets to pick a movie for us to watch in an upcoming You Choose episode. Any movie you like, let us know, and we will review it. So, Nick.
We're pretty close to being caught up, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we're doing pretty good. Sometimes we fall behind. Nick says, hello, Wands. See what I did there? WANDS, Whitney and Scott. See what he did there?
Oh!
That's pretty good. I thought I'd seen it all. he says, if not, that's fine. I'll probably never do that again. I'm Nick from FrenchToastSunday.com, and I was just listening to your podcast. I'm 2 episodes in, and I must say you guys put out a great podcast. The musical interludes are really funny, though I must admit I took off my headphones for the outro song of the latest episode. I don't know what that song is, and I don't want to know.
What
Aside
was
from
it?
That, keep up the great work. I assume that it was J+J+J headphones at our job.
Know. Sometimes we put silly ones at the end, though.
I hope it was Rappin' Rodney, the rap song that Rodney Dangerfield put out.
Put Rappin' Rodney at the end of one of our episodes?
No, maybe
so it probably wasn't
week.
That then.
Maybe it'll be this week. No, sometimes I just want
to
talk about
do
that. That was my bad segue into talking about Rappin' Rodney, which I feel we don't do enough on this show.
I don't think we ever have.
I really enjoyed your latest podcast, which happened to trail off into the wrestling territory. I grew up watching WWF and stopped when they changed the name to WWE. I've checked in every so often, but it's just not the same. I can remember begging my mom to stay up on Mondays to watch Raw and always being annoyed that Sunday Night Heat was only an hour. I know, right? This is ridiculous.
No, I can't.
I got nothing else to do on
a
Sunday.
I really can't.
I finally get home from church. There's wrestling on. It's an hour, and half the matches have Prince Albert. And that's bullshit.
Oh, you mean Lord Tensai?
Lord Tensai, yeah. They were, oh my god, they were the worst. But sometimes you'd see the small guys on Heat. You'd see, like, Funaki and, like, Takami Shinoku. They'd finally get some time. Like, if they still had Heat, you'd probably see, like, Yoshitatsu.
Maybe you should have just waited till 8 and watched The X-Files.
I did watch The X-Files.
You watched TV all day Sunday, huh?
I watched,
had the best day ever.
I watched TV all day, every day.
Oh.
Except for 3 hours when I went to church.
Every, like, few years, my parents would get on this, like, no TV on Sunday kick.
Yeah, I
and it
feel
would last
every
a
Mormon
few months,
parent
but
does
they
that.
Never tried to take X-Files away from me. I would have ran away from home. Like, that would have been the last straw. I would have been like, nope, fuck this, I'm out. X-Files? Really?
He's like, tip the TV over.
Yeah.
Bags
we had like that tube,
for it.
A tube television, like the biggest one we could have. So I like trying to.
You like you have to like rock it. You have to like rock it back and forth, and it like, finally just crashes down. And you're like, now what?
Did I ever tell you about the time, speaking of Rushmore a while back, did I ever tell you about the time my sister changed the channel when I was recording Rushmore, and so there's like a big chunk in the middle of Boy Meets World.
Not a bad alternative.
I was so mad.
One time, the most important thing I ever recorded was Dangerous Minds,
uh-huh.
because I couldn't see the R-rated version.
Right, right.
Finally comes on TV, and my dad had put a parental lock on the satellite, and we were having a barbecue, and my property back then was ginormous. Mm-hmm. So I had to, like, so it started... And then I have to run, fast as I've ever run. Little fat kid just booked it. Like, there was, like,
so
a little
cute.
Fat cloud.
Oh,
like,
Dangerous Minds is on!
Dangerous Minds is on! This is the best day of my whole life! No! And then I just book it, and I, like, grab him. I was like, what's the code? And he's just like, I can't tell you. What is
the
code,
man?
Change it later! And he, so he told me the code, and I, like, ran back. So now I still have that tape, that Dangerous Minds tape. And there's, like... 30 seconds missing at the beginning, and I was just, like, furious.
So, had it been, like, so what happened when I know we're off on a tangent, but when I recorded stuff from on TV, sometimes I'd miss stuff, and I'd, like, have never seen...
Oh, you get, like, a director's cut when you finally watch the adult
yeah,
version.
Exactly. So, like, I recorded 12 Monkeys off TV, and I missed the first 10 minutes, so I had no idea why they were underground.
Mm.
I had no idea what was going on, but I still watched that movie, like, 7 or 8 times from that recorded version because I loved it.
I only really missed a bum crushing a can with his foot and a Mexican kid running for the school bus.
Oh,
that's all I missed.
I missed,
but still,
like, the entire plot of
Pro
Monkeys.
Very exciting. Very. Nick goes on to say, those were the days. I even had the action figures, wrestling ring, the video games, and the belts. My brother and I were tag team champions, plus I was the Intercontinental champion, but I digress. No need to digress. We can talk about backyard wrestling for days and days
and
days.
Well, it's not, though.
Okay.
I
did go to pro wrestling school. I don't know if I mentioned that in the last episode, but also Rap and Rodney, and I do rap battles. during your show, I was able to better relate to Scott's list rather than Whitney's because I was an early 90s to late 90s wrestling fan.
Yes, yes.
I never got into WCW or ECW because I felt they weren't as cool as WWF. But I digress. Because WCW has... Because WCW had the Mexican and Japanese wrestlers, and all the Lucha Libre high flyers, and ECW had all the violence and tables, and, like, it was just, like, trashy New Jersey, Philadelphia, like, just garbage. It was the best.
Uh-huh.
90s WWF, like, had the high production. It was the Attitude Era. People loved to think
China.
It's the best. Had China. Today I was watching China wrestle Chris Jericho, and she beat him. She gave him a pedigree off the top rope.
Yeah, I remember when they let women wrestle men, because they weren't huge sexists.
Right.
Interesting.
Well, no, because also during that match, her friend came out in, like, just a thong. And,
Jericho
kissed her and then used her to, like, jump off and, like, plancha into
China. I do like, though, that there was... Okay, wait. Before I speak, was there ever a China is a lesbian storyline?
I don't think there was.
Because
she did date Mark Henry, who was going by the name... Sexual Chocolate at the time.
But he's a man.
He was a sex addict, yes.
But I like that, because there would have been an easy storyline there with China.
Yeah, I don't recall her ever being a lesbian. She was the muscle, though. And a lot of people thought she had a penis. Not in the storyline.
Yeah,
just the fans.
Just people in general, of course.
His top five were number four. Four and five were the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal, hands down my favorite tag team duo ever. There is an awesome Road Warriors documentary out, and you can just search it. I don't know what it's called, but it's just, the WWF put it out.
By the way, our TED review better be short.
It will be. It will be. Number three, Mick Foley. His name comes up again. Mankind, Dude Love, Cactus Jack. Mankind always depressed me, but I loved when Dude Love would team up with The Rock or Stone Cold. That's my brother loved Dude Love the most. Mm-hmm. I was a Cactus Jack fan.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, The Undertaker. He always came across as the good bad guy to me. He also had a pretty cool storyline when they introduced his brother Kane.
I don't like his eye makeup.
That's a good point. He has bad eye makeup. But that storyline with Kane where
burns down the funeral. I will set myself on fire.
Yeah. Best wife ever. Number one, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Pretty obvious. I noticed Whitney's list were mainly wrestlers she thought of that were funny in some way, and I was wondering if she had ever heard or saw footage of Val Venus or Al Snow. I think Whitney would get a kick out of these guys and their antics. I look forward to your next episode.
Show them to me.
I will. We still have another email from Daniel.
Oh my gosh.
This has hit 25 minutes.
And it's a page, Daniel, edit. Franks, Scott asked for feedback at the end of the latest episode. Oh, Daniel's from Test Patterns.
Hold on. Before we go any further, I gotta talk about Al Snow for a second. Since Nick brought him up.
This is taking too long.
His whole thing was he came out with a mannequin head.
Yes.
And he would talk to it. It would talk to him.
You told me about that.
Yes. His theme song was, "What does everybody want? Head! What does everybody need?
Yeah.
Head! What does everybody love? Head!" Of course, I'm screaming that in my living room, and my dad's like, "Absolutely not." But wouldn't explain to me why it was inappropriate. And
yeah, all he had to do was like, that's when someone sucks a penis, and you'd be like, "I am never saying that again."
I'm like, well, I don't watch wrestling now, so that's that. Okay.
Are you ready?
Daniel from Test Patterns?
Yeah, he said, Scott asked for feedback at the end of the latest episode, and something told me that I should write in and give feedback. I've been meaning to write in for a few episodes, so this may be a little scattered. First off, I, Daniel, will be willing to cover for Whitney anytime you need, Scott. Appreciate the plugs for Test Patterns podcast and your insistence of including them, despite some other hosts' disagreement.
You can find Test Patterns on Facebook.
If you ever feel like stopping, there will be no hard feelings, but Kyle, my co-host, and I appreciate it a lot. Any help you need with your show, feel free to ask either of us. Well, isn't he a sweetheart?
And I would love to guest on Test Patterns anytime you need somebody.
Loved the On Our Own review from a few episodes back. Glad you guys appreciated it for all the same reasons I did. It's so quirky and strange and exists in this time and space of film that is so strange to me. It's obviously direct-to-video, but there is a certain charm to the narrative point of view, which makes no sense to the actual melodrama of the story. The film, that he's talking about, like, the old lady, like, on the phone telling a story.
And then what happened?
The film is fascinating, to say the least, and gets better in group settings, too. Loved Scott's behind-the-scenes insight into how he edits the podcast. You have no idea how hard I laughed, because I do similar things when I edit my aforementioned podcast.
Test Patterns?
Test Patterns, your free weekly podcast for all things music, TV, video games, and whatever the hell else Kyle and I feel about talking about.
It's a good plug.
Yeah. It was no spaces, so I had a hard time reading it. As for the wrestling episode, I feel that what you had there was what they call in the comedy biz a two-percenter. 2% of your audience probably had their heads explode with all the wrestling talk you guys did and got every reference, but the 98% out there probably had no idea what you were talking about. It was really hard to understand with the knowledge of wrestling stops at maybe Hulk Hogan or The Rock. I fall into the 98%. I don't hate wrestling by any means, but I just don't know much about the sport nor its characters. and their relations, so it was just impossible to really understand the top five at all. It'd be like hearing about you casting the people in the movie of your life story, but you casted all your friends. That would be a good episode. I don't really know why, who the people are, so I can't really appreciate your discourse on it at all. Still an entertaining podcast episode overall, but anyone who wasn't part of the wrestling audience probably had a hard time appreciating your list, too.
Keep up. Look at this listener feedback. You are clearly in the 2%,
you are
Daniel.
2%er.
We cater to almost all wrestling fans.
Except for maybe wrestling fans are just, like, so excited that we're acknowledging them that they all wrote in.
People are, like, coming out of the woodwork for this one. Yeah. Also, I just had this great image of Ryan from the matinee.ca getting Bret Hart's glasses, like, as a child, like a little Canadian child. Because I was just,
I feel like
up.
Canadian children wore, like, suspenders and bow ties.
No way. They wear, like, big,
lumberjack
puffy
outfits.
Jackets. No, they wear, like, big, puffy, like, badass pink jackets like Bret Hart. And then get those beautiful visor glasses. And
no, I think they all look like lumberjacks and ventriloquist dummies. Daniel says, keep up the great work. Love the podcast. Love you two more. P.S. I've retold Scott's comment on seeing Think Like a Man to various friends and all find it hilarious. If Scott does not mix into his once-fledgling comedy routines, then I'm going to steal it from him. Those are hilarious stories and should travel beyond the realm of only this podcast.
He on drugs.
Okay, how long was this listener feedback?
That was 29 minutes and 43, 44, 45, 46, 47,
I read pretty fast, too.
48, 49, 50 seconds.
Okay, let's stop.
Next up is a review of Ted. Stick around.
Ted, you gotta move out.
Now, I'll help you get on your feet out there, I promise.
Bring it in, you bastard. Come on.
I love you.
Sorry, that's the thing.
The old...
Yeah, I know.
All right, we were gonna review Ted, but we actually found a couple more listener feedback emails. We're just gonna keep the theme going. Just kidding, we saw Ted.
You really hated it that much?
No!
That was like the saddest face I've ever seen.
I just wanted to love it so much. Based on that Red Band trailer that came
out.
That
trailer was the best trailer.
The best trailer of the year, hands down.
Because they sing that Thunder song, and Mark Wahlberg has that Boston accent.
Yep.
So great.
So, for those who don't know what Ted is, Seth MacFarlane, who's known for Family Guy, Cleveland Show, American Dad.
All the ones where there's a baby that talks and an animal that talks.
Yeah.
A couple other kids and a mom and dad.
Yep, they're all pretty much the same show.
Yeah.
He made his first film, and it's Ted, and it stars Mark Wahlberg in a comedy, which, if you've ever listened to this show, you know we very much approve of that.
Yeah.
Between The Other Guys, and
The
Happening, which is by far his best comedy. We're looking forward to this a lot. The Red Band trailer came out. It was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Wahlberg plays a guy who's dating Mila Kunis, and he makes a Christmas wish when he's a little kid. His teddy bear comes to life. They grow up together. They're best friends. And now he's got to try to deal with the...
Yeah, he's got to crude...
He's got to very much choose between the two. His crude
adolescent teddy bear.
Hot-smoking teddy bear. Or his super hot girlfriend, Mila Kunis.
Right. So it kind of dissolves into sort of a conventional plotline.
By the end, it's so conventional that I lost all interest.
Me too. Although, there were still moments in it that I was like, oh, that's funny, right? Or like, that's interesting.
I laughed
but, like,
out loud through the whole thing.
Like, there were still moments that caught me off guard, I guess, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, you know what the ending is going to be. You always know what the ending's
going to
be.
The ending ends with action, which it didn't have to. So...
it could have just stayed that, like, sort of romantic comedies. Yeah, like, I mean, you know it from the beginning, though. The action doesn't come out of nowhere, right? It's predictable. Like, there's this creepy Giovanni Ribisi.
Who I was very excited to see back in a movie. I love Giovanni Ribisi.
And his little fat son... And they want to buy the talking teddy bear.
Because he's clearly obsessed with him.
And he's obsessed with him, so you know that by the end he's going to kidnap him. And that's going to be like the climax.
The last half hour of the movie.
Right, which
and
is so boring.
And it's awful. And it ends at like the Red Sox Stadium and the whole... It's just... It all falls to pieces.
Do you mean Fenway Park?
Sure.
Pac. I wish I could do a Boston accent more than anything. I think they're so cool. I wish you had a Boston accent more than anything. Like, I would choose a Boston accent over, like, a New Zealand accent. Like, something really sexy. Uh-huh. Just because it'd be awesome if you were, like, that aggressive. You know, like, Boston people. That's not my doing voice, by the way. I just like how, like, aggressive Boston people are, men and women. Yeah. Like, that was my favorite part of the movie, was when, like, the girlfriend gets, like, Teddy's girlfriend, the teddy bears.
Uh-huh.
Which is a human.
Family guy.
Anyway, when the girlfriend gets, like, all busy, I guess is the right word, and she's, like, screaming at Mila Kunis in that Boston accent, that is so funny.
So that's the thing I want to say.
They are not classy women in Boston.
That's how the movie opens, is talking about how little class they have.
I love it.
This is where I'm torn. The movie is very funny. It's not 21 Jump Street funny, but it's solid. And I laughed out loud multiple times through the whole movie.
Uh-huh.
The end falls apart and is too cliche, and I didn't like that. But I feel the biggest thing is I've watched so much Family Guy in my life.
Every joke is predictable.
Half the jokes I've heard before.
Yeah.
The fight scene in the motel room is a ripoff of the fight scene with the chicken that Peter Griffin has. And they make a joke that he sounds exactly like Peter Griffin, that Ted does, because it's Seth MacFarlane doing the voice. He didn't have to do the voice of Ted.
Right.
I just don't understand, like, how that ended up.
It's amazing that this guy can make the same thing over and over and over again.
To the point where, like, it's already been discussed.
And I don't mean that people wouldn't greenlight it, because obviously they would. If they see that Family Guy's making a lot of money, and he just wants to make a live-action Family Guy, like, everyone's going to give him money for that, because it's going to make money. But, like, how can he, as someone who seems really intelligent,
just
like,
feel
okay about keep making that movie? And I'm not trying to say that in, like, a really jerk kind of way. I mean that sincerely. How can he feel like this is worth his time?
It'd be one thing if he tried to do something else and it bombed, and he's like, whoa, get back to the safety, get back to my roots. But he really has just done four major projects in a row that are practically the same.
But you know what I'm thinking of is Woody Allen.
Yeah.
And Woody Allen makes the same movie over and over and over again. But I guess with Woody Allen, it's like not just fart jokes. He's like trying to sort of discover something about human nature, and I don't really see... The Family Guy jokes are a lot easier. They're just about pop culture references.
Oh, my God. There's a scene where Joe McHale, who plays the other villain in this movie who wants to date Mila Kunis, he takes her on a date to go see Nora Jones. And there's this big, huge scene where Mark Wahlberg goes and tries to sing to Mila Kunis in the crowd, and it goes terribly wrong, and somebody gets knocked out, and it's like all this craziness. And you lead up, and Joe McHale is trying to still woo her and use this situation to his advantage.
Right.
Mila Kunis says, I'm sorry, I just have to leave. They cut to Joe McHale, and then he farts, and then says, oh, thank God, finally.
Yeah.
And then they cut away.
Right.
Like, it's that it's kind like of the bullshit most, that you're like...
It's like the basest fart joke ever.
Yeah, and to the point where it's not funny. And it's not even pointing attention to the fact that, look how dumb this is.
Uh-huh.
Like, they just do it like, that's a perfectly fine way to end that scene. And then you never see that character ever again, and here we are.
Yeah.
It was bullshit.
But, I mean, I think we're giving it too negative of a review, because when we got out of it, we didn't hate it. And there's all that Flash Gordon stuff that was so funny. Like, sometimes the pop culture references can really work in their favor.
Yeah.
If it's pop culture that you approve of, I guess.
Yeah, and okay, let's like talk Flash about the Gordon. Flash Gordon. That was the
hey,
best
Flash,
part of the
thanks
movie.
Thanks for saving every one of us.
Yeah, there were some, like, amazing jokes in this movie, and some
all
amazing
told by
sequencing.
Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg is the
he
funniest.
He is the perfect comedic timing. That guy...
It makes you love him.
...is a comedic genius.
Yeah.
Why isn't he only... I still don't understand why he does dramas and action movies. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. Doesn't he watch them and he's like, I'm good in this.
Yeah, I'm really funny in this. No, just kidding, I'll do Contraband. No, just kidding, I'll do...
I mean,
like,
I guess it's because he has those muscles. You can't let those muscles go to waste.
Right. if he rests on his comedy,
he'll just turn into Jonah Hill. He's fine.
Yeah. Okay. So let's wrap this up. But Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
This alone is worth seeing the movie.
Cause it's him. What's his name again?
Dave Jones, something like that.
Sam Jones.
It's the actual guy who played Flash Gordon in Flash Gordon, quarterback for the New York Jets, saving every one of us.
And it plays the Queen song so much in that movie.
And they love this guy. They grew up watching Flash Gordon, and then this great scene where he has to go to Mila Kunis's boss's party. He gets a call from Ted saying, like, you have to get over here now. We are partying with Sam Jones. We're partying with Flash Gordon. And then he goes, and then it's like a good 5 to 10 minutes. This huge chunk of the movie.
Cocaine-addled party with Flash Gordon.
Like, they get him to punch through a wall. They get him to, like...
You don't want to give away all the punchlines, man.
I assume a lot of people have seen this already, because it's doing so big of numbers. So I feel okay talking about spoilers. Is it doing really well? Yeah, it did really well. I don't know how it's holding up, but I know its opening was really strong.
Yeah, see, like, so... Is he just doing it because he's kind of a sellout? Seth MacFarlane?
No, I don't know that he's selling out. I think somebody said... I heard an interview with him where they were saying, like, we're going to let you do a movie. And he said, okay, I want to do something with animation because that's where I feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so that came Ted, but clearly he felt too comfortable. And
Did he direct it?
He did direct it. And so if you've seen Family Guy... A lot of these jokes are going to come as been there, done that. But there's enough in the movie to sit.
You were saying something really interesting. You were like, in 20 years, people might look back having never, like kids now, having never seen
Family Guy.
Because that one's not going to stand the test of time.
No.
And they might find this like undiscovered gem of a movie, like us finding some movie from 1960.
Like finding Flash Gordon.
Yes, like finding Flash Gordon to us.
When we found Flash Gordon, like, we really, shit ourselves.
Because it's so funny, and we had no connection with it. And I think that 20 years from now, people will look back on this movie and be like, this quirky gem, like, what?
Yeah.
Why wasn't this bigger? Why did people just forget about this?
Exactly. Because people will forget about this.
Well, yeah, because you can watch American Dad and the Cleveland Show instead, and right. That's on every week. So why go back and rewatch an old episode, basically?
Yeah. In 20 years, I think Ted is going to be discovered by a new generation of kids who will just flip out.
Yeah, I can see that.
Me too. And
because it's okay, it just doesn't, it's just same old.
And even the stupid jokes like the Joe McHale fart joke, 20 years of aging, now this is a so bad it's good type movie, that's going to be a drinking game. Mm. You know, like every fart joke, take a shot, like, and you will die.
Every time Ted smokes it out of a bong, take a shot.
Yeah, and you will be dead by the end of the movie, but...
Every mention of Tammy Lynn.
It's hard. There's really great scenes and sequences in the movie, but I was a little disappointed.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's our review on Ted. Next up, we're going to do our top five movies... The top five worst movies that we love. Stick around. We've done an episode about guilty pleasures, and then the guilty pleasures usually include like so bad they're good type of movies. We're doing something different with this week. These are the top five worst movies that we love. Whitney, what's your number five?
My number five is The Phantom Menace.
You love The Phantom Menace.
I kind of do.
Okay.
I saw it when I was a kid. And I was so caught up in the Star Wars hype. I was like 14 when it came out. And I was so caught up in it. I was, like, collecting the Pepsi cans with the Star Wars characters' faces on it. And, like, I had a big cutout of, like, Qui-Gon Jinn for some reason. Like, the Liam Neeson character in the movie. And I was, like, so caught up in it. And so by the time I saw it, I was, like, had to like it. It was like...
You were in too
deep.
You
couldn't be disappointed in it at that point. So I watched it a few more times, and like, as I started to admit that it wasn't that great of a movie, I also started to watch it with the rest of the movies, and as the next two were coming out too, I was watching it like, in sequence with that.
Yeah.
And I like it. Like, I think it's poor filmmaking. I understand that. It's terrible filmmaking. But there's so much to like about it as far as story. Like, I think that it's not inferior to the other Star Wars movies as far as story.
It's not what now?
Inferior.
Really?
As far as story, it's... Because the bad things about it are the acting and the CG, right? It's not the story, right?
I guess.
And it's so cool how the third one wraps it all together. Like, I legitimately, and I'm not ashamed, love the third one. Where it's like, you are my brother! Anyway, so, I think that, like, the story, gets wrapped up so nicely that you can't have Star Wars now without the Phantom Menace. And Natalie Portman is adorable in it, and what's his name? Scottish guy.
Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor is adorable in it. I wish they had hooked up.
Maybe they did.
No, I don't mean in real life. I mean in the Star Wars
thing.
Which is a totally different movie, in other words.
I can't believe that's your number five.
Yeah, there's some worse ones coming
up. Worse than Phantom Menace. My number five is In the Army Now from 1994.
Whatever, you're sitting here judging me for mine.
Starring Pauly Shore and Andy Dick. David Alan Greer, Cy Morales, and Lori Petty. Okay, here's the other thing about this movie.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it makes the list. I love it. I also watched this 2 days ago at work.
No way.
Hulu has it streaming.
No, you didn't.
I absolutely did, and you'll know because the plot is so fresh in my mind. Hulu has it streaming for free. I was doing some project where I could watch a movie at the same time. I watched In the Army Now. He works at an electronics shop called Crazy Boys with Andy Dick. Some hijinks go on. He gets fired. They end up joining the Army National Guard, thinking that they'll never see active combat. And, of course, they end up seeing combat and get lost in the desert in Chad and have to make it out and end up saving the whole base.
Why do you like this?
Because it's got some heart to it. Okay, I know people hate Pauly Shore, and God bless them. Like, there are plenty of reasons to hate Pauly Shore. But In the Army Now, not one of them. The 90s had these, like, had a string of these military comedies that are all terrible, but I like all of them. Major Payne with Damon Wayans, Renaissance Man with Danny DeVito, and In the Army Now. They just, like, kept making these military comedies, and, like, Ernest joins the Army. Like, they kept making these movies, and this one has some heart to it. Like, he's not so much the weasel in this movie as he is in movies like Encino Man.
He's not really a weasel in Encino Man.
No, the weasel, like his character.
Oh, right.
Like
I try and forget about Pauly Shore.
Yeah, Son-in-Law, like those movies where he was just really playing up the, like, bad voices and stuff.
Hey,
this
buddy.
Movie, hey, buddy. Yeah, this has definite elements from that. But it's the most watchable movie that Andy Dick has ever been in.
Okay.
And Lori Petty, you'll remember her as Johnny Utah's love interest in Point Break, and she's in Free Willy.
Ew, I do remember her naked.
Yeah.
Ew.
In this movie, she loves to make out with Pauly Shore, but she's totally, like, badass. She joined the military to see active combat, and she's, like, way more badass than anybody else in that group.
She's going to be disappointed.
No, because turns out, if you join the Army Reserves, you get shipped to Chad and get to, like, shoot bazookas.
They don't care that you're a woman there?
No, they don't seem to do that. They don't seem to care at all. So, that's my number five. What's your number four?
Showgirls.
You love Showgirls.
It's so awesome. Like, all you have to know about Showgirls is that scene where they bond over eating dog food. We have talked about it countless times. It's like, so we went and saw J.B. Smoove in
to stand up.
And he was trying to, like...
Tell him who J.B. Smoove is, though.
Oh, he's the black guy from Curb Your Enthusiasm that Larry lives with. So he was trying to, like, make all these jokes about things that he felt should be relatable to all of us. He would be like, you know, when you're having sex with your woman and she has hives, and you're just like, no.
Never been
no,
there,
No, I have never had, like, he kept on thinking all of these things were really relatable. That's what that scene in Showgirls is like. Like, they're just like, some writer was like, I ate dog food once. I'm sure everybody's eaten dog food. You know that time when you eat dog food?
Sometimes you just eat dog food.
Yeah, and then they bond over it. And it's full of moments like that where you're just like, what the hell is going on in this scene? But it in the world of the movie, it's completely commonplace.
Right.
So, really, as a mythology, the mythology of Showgirls is really consistent.
Yeah, that's true. Because there's a lot in that movie where you're like, no.
No one would do this. This is not normal, like that pool sex scene.
Yeah.
That is not normal. Nobody does that. But Showgirls, they do. Like, in the world of Showgirls, that is normal behavior. Kyle MacLachlan and Jesse Spano
have
crazy pool sex.
That's gross. That's a good pick. That's a really good pick. My number four is Spawn.
This movie made me, like, ill.
This is the first movie I ever saw by myself in theaters, and I thought it was totally badass.
So you have, like, a special relationship to
it. Yeah, but I also rewatched this, like, 2 weeks ago, and it holds up. And I never read the comics or watched the HBO cartoon. Really, this is the only Spawn I know.
That cartoon made me so uncomfortable.
And it should have. Like, people still love that. But this was Michael J. White from Black Dynamite playing Spawn, and the fat clown, the Violator, is played by John Leguizamo in a fat suit. I don't get why people love The Crow, but they don't love Spawn.
Mm.
Spawn has better graphics, better action.
The Crow
has
someone playing the electric guitar on the roof in makeup.
Yeah, that's true, but Spawn has these, like, amazing claws that fly out, and, like, you have lines like John Leguizamo, like, every time a bell rings, or no, what is it? Every time an angel farts, I don't remember.
John Leguizamo will be making another appearance on this list.
Oh, will he? Okay, let's keep moving on, although I just love Spawn.
Oh, is it my turn?
Yeah, it's your turn.
Okay, number three, Super Mario Brothers, the movie.
Oh,
I hate that movie. Guns.
Hate that movie.
Why do people hate this movie? When
because
it came out, it was perfect for us.
No, it was not, because
yes,
it has nothing to do with the Mario that you know.
Yes, it does. Wait, let me look it up really
quick.
I get
that the characters are called Mario, Luigi, and they're plumbers who, like, and there's dinosaurs, but, like,
and it has Yoshi, and Yoshi's still real cute.
Oh, no, he is not.
And then it has, remember when they have those big guys and they shrink down their heads?
Yes.
And they look, like, so crazy. That's what I liked about this movie, is everything looked so crazy to me as a kid. It used to be on TV, and I'd watch it every time. And it was alone. I was so alone.
You still are alone. That movie is garbage. Dennis Hopper.
He's awesome.
As King
Koopa. Yeah, with that headpiece.
Why wouldn't you have, like, a CG monster? Like, if you can make John Leguizamo look like the Violator, why would you have just Dennis Hopper walking around with, like, fake...
Because,
like,
everybody in this movie was, like, real looking.
I know, that was the misstep.
Was
that was the misstep. You take a cartoon video game.
I guess I just didn't have that much connection to the video game. We didn't have a Nintendo.
Oh, I remember, like, because
and
now you know what Bowser
so
looks
cute.
Like. John Leguizamo. And Bob Hoskins is a great Mario. I will say I love Bob Hoskins.
Bob Hoskins is a great person.
Yeah. He's like a Tom Wilkinson. Like, I have to point him out whenever he's in things. But I don't point him out in this movie.
Samantha Mathis?
Because I don't ever watch this movie, ever.
Oh, from American Psycho. Well, you're... I don't know. I don't think you're wrong, necessarily, but...
But you love it.
Especially as a kid, it, like, captivated me. Like, all that slime hanging from the ceiling, and it was, like, her father, yeah. like, the king.
Yeah.
And Yoshi was just so cute. I don't know. What is to hate?
We'll watch it again. I'll tell you scene by scene.
Okay.
My number three is Blast from the Past with Alicia Silverstone, Brendan Fraser, Sissy Spacek, and Kristen...
Do you say Kristen... her movie, her name Alicia or Alicia?
Either. Okay. I grew up saying Alicia.
Me too.
But I think it's Alicia.
Oh.
But I always say Alicia. I don't know.
Ew, now that we're saying it a bunch of times, it sounds like a ridiculous name.
Alicia.
Alicia. Alicia.
Alicia sounds better.
No, both of them sound bad.
Anyway.
Yes?
I don't know if you guys know this, but in the 50s, there was a Cuban Missile Crisis, and people thought the missiles were going to come and blow up America. So a lot of people, which I don't even think, I want to count. I want, like, a number of how many bomb shelters were actually built.
I know, because it seems like every book someone built a bomb shelter.
Right. I don't know anybody now who says, I have a bomb shelter in my basement.
But there were tons, there's tons of houses around here built way before that.
Yeah.
So if people were living there, they should have bomb shelters.
Maybe it's more about people who lived, like, on the East Coast. Like, no one was going to hit Utah with a missile.
No, because the movies, it's always California.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway,
okay.
Christopher Walken and Sissy Spacek are pregnant. They go down. A plane crashes in their backyard. They think it's the missiles. They go down and seal it up for good. They spend the next, like, 25, 30 years in this underground container where they raise their son, Brendan Fraser. Mm-hmm. Have you seen this before?
I've seen parts of it on TV and quickly turned the channel.
The real good part of this movie comes when they decide that they're running out of supplies and they need to send Brendan Fraser up onto the Earth's surface by himself for the first time to go get supplies.
Okay.
And he gets up there and sees things like prostitutes and transsexuals and lowrider cars and realizes that the missiles did go off. Everybody's been mutated by radiation and everybody freaks out. He meets Alicia Silverstone. She tries to, he tries to woo her. I love this damn movie. I'm like having trouble explaining why. But if it's on TV, I watch it. And if I catch the ending credits, I go get the DVD and I put it in. I love the hell out of this movie. I've seen, and Alicia Silverstone was my giant childhood crush.
Right.
So
that's where I first went when I was looking for, like, which ones to put on this list were, like, my childhood crushes.
Because you watched Garbage.
And you loved them. Yeah.
You watched The Glass House almost made my
list. I watched Far and Away so many times. I know, like, that didn't make the list because it's not necessarily Garbage, but it's close, man.
Yeah.
And I watched that so much.
There is just, like, I could go on and on and on, and I won't, but just naming terrible scenes from Blast from the Past
mm-hmm.
that I love, that, like, something about its horribleness makes me love it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this whole list is about. What's your number two?
My number two is Congo.
Monkey
Even
movie.
Even when I was a kid, everyone saw Congo and hated it as kids, and I was like, I just want to see it. It was rated R. I'm like, I want to see Congo so bad. And then I finally saw it on TV. I thought it was rated R.
I don't know that it was.
Maybe I rented it.
I don't think Congo's rated R.
Oh, well, I saw it at some point. Not in theaters, though.
PG-13.
I saw it at Amber Bottoli's house. And I loved it. I thought it was so good. Remember, there's a talking monkey. There's a monkey that does sign language, but then it has an interpreter in it, right?
Yeah.
It's like, and she's just like, Amy, good gorilla. Amy, love you.
Yeah.
Ugly gorilla.
I always called this movie, like...
Amy.
And people were like, oh, have you seen Congo? And I was like, that Gorilla movie with the lasers? No, no thank you. No thank you. Haven't seen Congo.
The best part about a Congo is that there aren't any gorillas in it. It's all people in terrible gorilla outfits, except for Amy. Amy's good, but like the white gorillas that they're searching for.
Oh yeah, it's hideous.
They look like the werewolves on Buffy. Like they are so terrible looking. But it's like, it's exciting. I remember at one point someone has an eyeball in their hand.
Tim Curry's the bad guy.
Tim Curry, Laura Linney.
Ernie Hudson.
Has a special relationship with Amy the gorilla. Like, it's just... It's...
Tim Curry plays a bad guy named, I'm gonna look, Herkimer Homoloka.
It's very entertaining.
We watched it not that
not
long ago.
And not in a so bad it's good way. I think it's entertaining. I know, like a couple years ago.
After watching Blood Monkey.
I like Blood Monkey, too.
I'm surprised that one didn't make your list.
It was a little silly. I've seen Congo multiple times.
Blood Monkey is a little silly.
Yeah, I've seen Congo multiple times, though, and I've only seen Blood Monkey once. I probably will never watch Blood Monkey again, but I could see me getting a hankering for Congo, because I like that shocking monkey, and I like its voice so much.
Was it based on a Michael Crichton book?
Good gorilla. Yeah, and I read the book before I saw...
Yeah, I read, like, 10 pages of the book and said no thank you.
When I was, like, 10, 11... I read every Michael Crichton book. Like, even his weird, like, medical dramas, definitely meant for adults.
Yeah.
Needful Things about, like, an abortion gone awry. I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, this is a great book.
My number two is Christmas with the Cranks.
No.
I have an affinity for terrible Christmas movies. This list was almost 5 Christmas movies.
Yeah.
Because I'll watch
like
them
Eyes
all.
Wide Shut. Die Hard.
No.
Lethal Weapon.
I mean, like, Jingle All the Way, Christmas with the Cranks, Surviving Christmas, Four Christmases, like, any of these ones, I watch them. Christmas with the Cranks, for those who somehow aren't familiar, 2004, which means I was 20 when this came
out. Way too old.
Saw in theaters. Stars
Tim Allen.
Tim
and you
Allen.
Were 20 and you went.
I was like, oh, sweet Christmas with the Cranks is out. Tim
like
Allen.
I like how your voice changes from when you were a kid and you're like, Digital Minds is on.
To 20. To too old.
The Cranks is out.
Oh, Christmas with the Cranks. Tim Allen, Jimmy Lee Curtis, Dan Aykroyd. I had to rewatch the trailer for this one and... Here are the bullet points for Christmas with the Cranks. They are the staple of a small Christmas community, very obsessed with Christmas. Their daughter goes off to college, decides I won't be here for Christmas. They think, we're going to go on a cruise. The Cranks are going on a cruise.
Uh-huh.
The whole rest of the town hates that idea, tries to fight them at every turn. They're like protesting in front of their house like, celebrate Christmas with us. Celebrate Christmas with us. And they said, no, we're going on... Oh, the hijinks, Whitney. I'm talking like he gets a tan and his teeth whitened and Botox. He looks insane. Can't even eat his grapes. Spoiler alert. 12 hours before they're about to leave, they get a call from their daughter saying, oh, I changed my mind. I am coming back for Christmas. They've just burned bridges with everyone in their town. What they have to do is put on the perfect Christmas for their daughter Blair and her new boyfriend in 12 hours. And the community comes together and does it.
That is really special.
Yeah, it's really great.
I am really happy for them.
It's one of my favorite Christmas movies. I've probably seen Christmas with the Cranks 5 to 7 times.
That's insane.
I love it.
That's an insane thing to do.
I watched the trailer.
Do you understand how insane that is?
I do. That's why I made the list, but I watched the trailer, and it made me want to watch it again. Oh, also, the tagline for this movie is no ho-ho. What's your number one?
My number one is Stephen King made-for-TV miniseries.
Like the Langoliers.
The Langoliers, especially the Langoliers. Or It. Or in 1999, there's this one. I just looked this up, but I remembered the Stephen King on a plane movie.
Yep.
Yeah, Storm of the Century.
I was going to say.
Amber Bodily and I. Amber Bodily's coming a lot. Evelyn Bodily is coming up a lot in this podcast. She and I watched Storm of the Century. That was very exciting. The Shining TV miniseries. I loved that one. Mostly the Langoliers was the best. Oh, The Stand. That was a good one.
They were all
The Tommyknockers.
So long.
I know, and I'll watch them. Like, I didn't watch most of these on TV. I'll watch them beginning to end. Like, I'll just watch a Stephen King miniseries.
If I ever go out of town... I'll spend...
When I go out of town, I watch a new one. And it's like, I'm so excited because I can finally watch, like... Because
I won't do it. I saw the Langoliers. I saw the Langoliers as a kid, and I liked it.
Oh, there's like these CG spiky alien things.
That like eat the universe?
Yeah, they eat like the plane. I don't know, it's hard because I've seen so many, and there's so many.
It overlaps.
Yeah, like it's hard to keep track like between that and like the butt monster from that other movie we watched with Morgan Freeman. But you gotta keep in mind, Salem's Lot was a TV series too, and that one was really good.
See, and I thought that was so boring as a kid.
No, people like normally like
that. No, people love Salem's Lot. He looked like he was made out of cardboard. And I
Or Cat's Eye. It was Cat's Eye for TV?
I don't think so.
Well, it should have been. Not very good, but I really liked it.
I would love to find out if anybody else watches those besides you, because...
Of course they do.
Who? I mean, people watched it.
People watched it at the time. I remember them always being, like, these big events.
Right.
Like, oh my gosh, the Tommyknockers is going to be awesome.
And then, no, it wasn't, but keep making them. That's how I felt about his books, too.
I kind of just like any Stephen King movie, but it's really the series that are the bad ones. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I love Pet Sematary, but that's like a movie, right?
Yeah.
I think it's good.
For me, there are very few Stephen King movies that I enjoy.
Why?
Very few.
There's violence.
There isn't much, though. Like,
and,
it was
like,
those
stock characters.
They seemed so... When I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies, they were like the Golden Grail. I was like, man, when I get older, I'm going to watch all of these.
I'm going to watch
it. And then I watched Silver Bullet, and I was like...
I love Silver Bullet! That movie's awesome!
And, like, Cujo was okay.
Cujo
the Shining
was
awesome, of course, but, like, there's...
Like, that's the one he doesn't like. The Kubrick version?
Yeah.
It's the TV series Shining that he likes.
It's an abomination.
That's so bad.
All right. Well, my number one is from 1995, and it is Jury Duty, starring Pauly Shore.
Yeah, you love him, huh? You didn't get over him with the rest of us.
But here's the thing, though, is like you show me Encino Man, can't stand it. You show me Son-in-Law, don't like it. For some reason, Jury Duty, I watched the hell out of this movie when I was a little kid. So 95, so I was like 11. Probably from like 11 to 13, we owned the VHS tape. I watched it like crazy. Only later did I find out that it was like totally an abortion of 12 Angry Men. Yeah. It's the exact same plot, except for you put Pauly Shore in there. And... The plot for this movie
is so better,
because I loved it. Like, I don't like Biodome, but I love Jury Duty, and I've watched it recently. Stanley Tucci's in it, Abe Vigoda, Charles Napier, like, everyone's in this movie.
Yeah, everyone. Everyone who's anyone, like, so-and-so Napier.
But also, Tia Carrere. Can we talk about how big of a babe she is?
Sure.
Wayne's World, High School High...
I only saw her in Wayne's World, I think.
Wayne's World 2?
Yeah, but...
Tia Carrere is, like, one of the hottest women of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt. And so Jury Duty, that was something
more than China?
More than China. This, he has no job, which, again, he always gets into these situations. Pauly Shore, when his character doesn't have a job...
He is just up to no good.
He finds out that if he becomes a juror, they will give him $5 a day. And so he decides he's going to extend this murder trial where the guy is, like, clearly guilty. Not to save this guy, not because he knows he's innocent like 12 Angry Men, and he's going to try to give him a fair shot. Because he wants that $5 a day so bad, he's willing to drag out this trial. Everybody hates him. He's trying to hit on Tia Carrere, who is a fellow juror. And the movie just progresses like that.
And hijinks ensue.
Not as many hijinks as you'd think, though. But he does have a dog who loves Jeopardy. So, that got into the plot somehow. It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, but you love
it. But I love it. And we'll watch it anytime anybody ever wants which is never.
Whose list people will think is worse. Mine has The Phantom Menace, so I think mine is maybe a little bit more controversial.
Yeah, Batman and Robin almost made my list. Do you have any runners-up?
I don't remember them. I'm sorry. I erased them.
Fine, because I have a little list here. The Shadow, Teaching Mrs. Tingle, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Fools Rush In. Did I say The Shadow? Probably three more Pauly Shore movies.
I had Paint Your Wagon. A lot of people think that one's bad.
You had Newsies in your first
draft. A lot of people think that's bad. It's a weird movie. If you think about it, it's like a kid's movie about, like, workers' rights in the 20s or whatever. Like, it's a weird movie.
Yeah. I had Enough with Jennifer Lopez. Oh,
that movie is terrible.
Like I said, The Glass House. I had Heartbeeps. I love tons of bad movies. To make this list, all I did was go and look in my DVD collection.
That's sad, man. I had Cider House Rules. That's a terrible movie.
That I own.
Yeah.
So we want to know, what are the worst movies that you love? Email us at franklymydearpodcast@gmail.com. Nick, if you're still listening, and I don't know how you could be, email us and let us know what your You Choose pick is, and we'll be back next week with something awesome. Thanks for listening.
Did you not think this was awesome?
No, this was great.
Oh, okay.
Something else awesome.
I thought you were saying, like, he couldn't stay listening.
I don't know. 30 minutes of listener feedback. It was a lot of
you don't think
feedback.
This was a great episode?
I enjoyed it.
I got a little bored towards the end.
Did you?
Yeah.
We were talking about some pretty terrible movies.
Yeah, and getting into the plot a little too much.
Really? I feel that, like, no one's going to watch Jury Duty, so I should just tell them what
Amy
Jury Duty's about.
Bored.
Stick around.
That require headphones. I suppose if you were lucky enough to get the job at the end of the assembly line to test the headphones at a headphone factory, that would be the awesomest job ever. Or maybe like whatever your job is right now, if you're sitting at your desk listening to this CD, and I suppose like also the Pope might use them or something when he's talking to God.
We both have headphones at our job. We both have headphones at our job. We both have headphones at our job. We both have headphones at our